This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your official home to talk New York sports is WFAN. Call us anytime at 888-808-1019. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Okay. A little bit after 8 p.m. on this Tuesday night, February 11th. Your nighttime host, Keith McPherson, on the Fan, taking your calls. Coming up next, Zach Rosenblatt will join us from The Athletic to talk Jets. But a couple things before we try to sneak a couple calls in. Watching the Knicks game, it's a one-point game. Knicks are up 27-26. Karl-Anthony Towns has 9. Precious Achiuwa has 6. And the next leading scorer is Josh Hart with 5. Refreshing that, but keeping an eye on the Knicks game as well. The first quarter has now come to an end. Before we went to the break, I said I was going to give you my thoughts on Kyle McCord. Kyle McCord is kind of a local guy. He's from South Jersey, Mount Laurel, New Jersey. Played his high school ball in Pennsylvania at St. Joseph's Prep. He went to Ohio State, and then he transferred to Syracuse. I got to watch at least two or three of his games this year because there's a young man named Trevor Pena, who was born in the Bronx, but went to my high school, Ocean Township High School, and one of my homies hit me like, bro, there's this kid at Syracuse, this receiver, you got to check him out, he's balling. So I started watching him. I started watching McCord, Fran Brown, and the Syracuse football program, who had some new life this year. Kyle McCord is not a first-round pick. I think he is a second-round pick for somebody, though. And same thing I feel about Jalen Milroe. I expect the first day to be 3 quarterbacks. Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, Jackson Dart. Unless somebody falls in love with a Jalen Milroe type, which, you know, I was very critical of Jalen Milroe. It pissed me off to hear people compare him to Lamar Jackson, who should have been a 3-time MVP. He is not Lamar Jackson. And he is not where Lamar Jackson was at any point at Louisville coming out, winning the Heisman. I just think it's a lazy comp because he's a runner. And I was hard on Jalen Milroe. I said he's more Deebo Samuel than Lamar Jackson. He's more, I can't even think of a comp. I'm glad he's more Taysom Hill. You know what I'm saying? Like he's type brolic. He's built like a linebacker. I don't really like his throwing motion and his footwork. And you know, I wanted to change my opinion on him. And I followed a lot of the stuff coming out of the Senior Bowl. And I saw his little showing at the Senior Bowl. I don't think he really helped himself at the Senior Bowl, where he was competing with Jackson Dart. And I think Jackson Dart helped himself. And somebody's going to take a chance on Jackson Dart in the first round, I believe. We are coming up on this schedule in the NFL, which, you know, it's in the next month, right? The tag window opens February 18th. Then we'll have the NFL Combine February 24th to March 3rd. And then the tag window will close after that March 4th. And then the negotiation period opens March 10th to 12th. And then the new league year begins March 12th. So, I mean, pretty soon on the Fan, you'll hear us talking about, you know, what comes out of the combine, what free agents are signed, what players are tagged, what moves are being made. And we'll have a clearer view at, you know, what the Jets and Giants can do. I'll say this before we take another call. The Jets should not use that number 7 overall pick on a quarterback. There's too much talent. They may be able to take their pick of the best corner, best receiver, best offensive lineman on the board. Do not make the mistake and reach for a quarterback there. It just is. It would be the wrong thing for this regime. They got to learn from past mistakes of regimes prior. Take the best player available. You have multiple needs where you could plug in a corner like Will Johnson. You could plug in a Will Campbell. You can plug in I don't know if Mason Graham falls. Like, you know, there a Teteroa McMillan. There are multiple talented players. I just named a receiver, a D lineman, offensive lineman, a corner. There are multiple talented players. Hell, if you want to take Tyler Warren because you didn't get Brock Bowers last year, do that. Do not draft a quarterback at 7. Let's take another call or two from these Giants fans before we do end up really talking Jets. Again, Zach Rosenblatt will join us at 8:15. Gene is in Stanford. What's up, Gene? You're on the Fan.
Hey, Keith. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
First time caller, and I think you do a great job. I get to listen to you on my ride home, and so enjoy what you do on your program.
Thank you.
But talk about Eli Manning and sort of Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame induction. Yeah, I lived in Denver for a long time. I'm 55 years old, and got to watch Elway win a couple Super Bowls. Got to watch Peyton win Super Bowls, and Eli's just, I'm not going to take anything away from him. Those two plays that he had in the Super Bowl, those were huge plays. And showing up clutch in the biggest moments, when the lights are the brightest, I mean, that says a lot. And so I'm not going to say you shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame, but you know, I think it's for me, since I'm not a local, hearing how the New York fans have this huge megaphone because there's so many Giants fans that, you know, they think that Eli should be in the Hall of Fame on the first ballot. And, you know, when he wasn't inducted there, just how, you know, I'm going to call it just, you know, the fan irrationality. You're just taking care of your own guy with a huge New York megaphone. I just find it interesting just from the outside, and having watched Elway and his brother Peyton play, it's clear he's just not a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Correct. Thanks for the call, Gene. It was not close. So we all were wrong. Now, will he be a second ballot? Maybe. But, you know, the line gets a couple new guys in it. I think Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, a couple other names. And, you know, the thing I'll say is this. Like, I hate that the Hall of Fame has to be like a New York City club. And I don't know if you guys used to go clubbing pre-pandemic. It's been a while for me. But, like, I used to pull up to some of these clubs, and it's like propaganda. Right, you gotta grease the guy to get in. You gotta grease the bouncer at the front door, and then after you slip him $40, you get in there and you're like, "Where's everybody at?" There's a long ass line outside. Why we gotta wait to get in? I was like, "Oh, we're eventually gonna let you in, but you're not VIP. Your name's not on the list, so you gotta wait in line to get in the club." I feel like Eli's gotta wait in line to get in the club, but like his rings and who he is, and like even the fact that he had to follow up in the shadow of Archie Manning and Peyton Manning, how hard that was to do here with the media scrutiny and the way that he did it. That stuff just doesn't carry weight outside of here. They look at Eli and they say he was never dominant. He never struck fear into opponents' hearts. They never looked at Eli like, oh no, here comes Eli. How do we stop him? Doug is in Levittown. Before we go to break, you got it, Doug.
Thank you. Piggyback off what the last caller was saying, I'll go a little further. I mean, you know, these Giants fans, I've been listening to them on the radio since the Hall of Fame announcement came out that Eli wasn't making it. And I thought maybe reality would set in that this guy just isn't viewed by the rest of the league as a Hall of Famer. But it seems like the denial has only ramped up. I mean, this guy was never at any point in his career even a top five quarterback, probably not most years even top 10. And this idea that he was taking a beating back there isn't true either. I mean, Ben Roethlisberger was getting sacked more. Phillip Rivers was getting sacked more. And those are the guys from his class. This guy was not good. He threw a million interceptions. He led the league in picks 3 times. Yeah, he balled out in the playoffs a couple times. But most weeks, if you were going up against Eli Manning, you weren't fearful, obviously. You were probably pumped because you knew you were going to get a pick or two and you were going to get some crummy quarterback play on the other side. This guy was terrible most seasons. He wasn't even bad. Like, he wasn't even good. Like, he was just bad.
All right, Doug, I think you're carrying it a little bit. I'll say this before we break. As much as we make of the Super Bowl, as much as we make of playoffs, as much as we make of what guys do in those moments, and then we try to devalue the regular season, it can't be the other way around. But it always is. It's a moving of goalposts, right? It's a moving of goalposts. We say, oh, Aaron Judge, doesn't matter if he hits 70 home runs in a regular season until he does it and comes through in October. This guy came through. He was 8-4 in the playoffs, went on two historic runs, won the Super Bowl, got it done. It wasn't just a couple plays. They were game-winning drives against the coach that people consider the greatest ever with 8 rings and the quarterback that people consider the greatest ever with 7 rings. That doesn't carry any weight anywhere outside of New York. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of crazy when you think about how, like, yeah, you just heard Doug and the caller before that lived down in Denver. They just don't want to look at Eli the way that I think, obviously, the Giants fans looked at him. To say that he wasn't hit, come on. There might be numbers to say that Ben Roethlisberger or Philip Rivers were sacked more. I don't know those stats off the top of my head, but I can remember games of Eli Manning getting his block taken off, literally bleeding. I remember Eli Manning hurting his shoulder where he was supposed to be out, potentially out, I think, the rest of the season. Nah, he's back. Iron Man. So just, you know, I can respect that he's not a first ballot Hall of Famer, but don't disrespect the guy and what he did now. He should be second ballot. Last week I said they weren't going to put Peyton and Eli in as the first brothers over Shannon Sharp and Sterling Sharp. There are politics. There are other things at play as well. I just think that now that the door was closed on him, more people are piling on to say, this guy wasn't good. He was good. He's a two-time Super Bowl champ, and there are a lot of quarterbacks that don't ever get to the Super Bowl, don't ever win the Super Bowl, that get held up in higher regard.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Your official home to talk New York sports is WFAN. Call us anytime at 888-808-1019. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Now on the Fan in New York, KM to AM, my guy, Zach Rosenblatt, who covers the Jets for The Athletic. Zach, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. What's up, Keith?
Hey, good to hear from you again. Hope all is well. Aaron Rodgers is the song that doesn't end, and it actually did end. It is over. That era is over. What were your initial thoughts when you found out that the Jets were done? They were moving on, that this actually wasn't something they were going to go back on with this new regime.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I kind of been saying I didn't think he was going to come back since before Aaron Glenn was hired, but I think once you heard everything Aaron Glenn had to say at his press conference, you know, even his comments about Aaron, where he said this isn't about Aaron, and kind of just emphasizing that it's a team, it's not about one guy. Like, I think that all was pointing towards this. I think they were, like, open to considering bringing him back under the right conditions, but, you know, I think those conditions were things he wasn't going to be excited about. Things like, you have to come to mentor minicamp, you have to stop going to McAfee every week. And I don't know that he was ready to commit to those things. And even if he was, they might still not have wanted to bring him back. So this is the right direction, ultimately, for a team that's trying to rebuild at least their culture. And, you know, there's financial implications where it would have cost you more down the line if you brought him back now. And I don't think that at 42, he's going to be worth that.
Yeah, I understand the cap hit. I understand kind of ripping the Band-Aid off right now. How much do you know about the thought that, you know, in this whole search for a GM and head coach, I'm sure the question was floated out to all of the candidates about bringing Aaron Rodgers back. How much do you know about, you know, other candidates suggesting that they move on? There's a little bit of a rumor that other candidates would have followed suit.
Yeah, I mean, they talked to a lot of candidates, so I can't say for sure like what every single one said, but I do get the vibe that there were a decent amount of them that were more leaning towards the side of they'd prefer not to bring him back. And I know that they did. That was a topic conversation in these interviews. You know, but ultimately, Woody, to his credit, was going to let the GM and the head coach kind of make the decision, and they made the decision that they didn't want him back. I think if Woody had his druthers, he wouldn't have wanted him back either, ultimately, just because on the way things played out last season and the way Aaron was kind of taking shots at Woody and, you know, making jokes about his son and things like that. That's why I was always leaning more towards them having a divorce, and Aaron might have wanted that anyway. I don't know how happy he was with the ownership group and stuff like that. So ultimately, this is a divorce that is probably best for both parties. And now the question is whether another team is going to be willing to take on Aaron and all that comes with him.
Yeah, there's a lot of people leaning into this being a Woody Johnson decision. I don't believe it's a Woody Johnson decision alone. I think this is very much an Aaron Glenn and Darren Mooji decision, because at the press conference, Woody said, you know, when he was asked point blank, he said, I hired these guys, like, I'll let them make that decision. And I think ultimately the biggest thing is they watched the film, right? I said this, you know, about Aaron Rodgers. He had enough on film. The eye in the sky doesn't lie. He had enough on film that was more bad than good. He's 41 years old. And if they really are just evaluating the roster player by player and comb through every single play, I think that was enough to move on from him. But then once you have the conversation with him, and obviously there's some grace for a Hall of Famer, right? But once you have the conversation with him and he seems like he's not trying to budge at all, the things like the Pat McAfee show and training camp came out today. What can you tell us about the conversation around his appearances and then also around, you know, mandatory mini camp?
Yeah. Like I said, I think that was something that they presented to him. Like, look, if you're going to come back, you know, it's going to be different. You know, you're not on an island by yourself. You're one of 53 players. And I don't, you know, a part of that is, you know, he values his time on the Pat McAfee show, and he likes the ability to go on a trip to Egypt in the middle of minicamp and things like that. So they pretty much, you know, made it clear that wasn't going to be the case if they were even to bring him back. And if he was willing to agree to those things, then they would consider it and things like that. And ultimately, I get the impression that he wasn't willing to do that. Maybe I don't know that for sure, but that's, I mean, they wouldn't have told him he wasn't coming back that quickly, I think, if he was more willing to, you know, change his opinion. I don't think he went into those meetings thinking that's how it was going to go. I think it was going to be more of a conversation about, you know, what their relationship might look like and things that he thinks need to change and things like that. But what it turned into was more of what we just described.
Yeah, more like procedural, more just like a hard stance and some rules laid down. And I don't mind it. I think it's the right way to go. I talked about, you know, him being on Pat McAfee is a distraction. He is someone that said that the Jets needed to eliminate the distractions and things like that in the building. Him having a Netflix show and showing his ayahuasca retreats and, you know, always going on Pat McAfee to attack people that were vaccinated and promoting the ayahuasca. I just felt like it was like, okay, you know, we understand that's who you are, but if you are a part of this team, you got to leave that in the past. And he's got more years on Pat McAfee than he does in the NFL, so I understand that. He doesn't need the money. I don't think it was like, hey, this is a paid appearance, I don't want to quit that. I think it was just a power struggle thing. Like, I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm 41 years old, this is what I want to do, and at this point in my career, like, I don't have to, you know, fall in line for you, a first-time head coach. And then that brings me to my next thing. I thought it was going to be an X's and O's thing. I thought it was going to be, all right, this is a first-time offensive coordinator, this is a first-time play caller with Tanner Engstrand. What do you think about the style that Tanner is going to bring from Detroit and where we'll be going with the next quarterback? Like, what do you think they'll be looking for? Because I don't think Aaron Rodgers and the style of quarterbacking that we saw him play this year fits with what we've seen Jared Goff do the last couple years.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if he goes along with the way it was in Detroit, then, I mean, it'll be a lot of, you know, motion. It'll be a lot of, you know, I think they'll be really lean on the running game, and the quarterback ultimately would need to be more of a game manager than someone that really takes over. I think they've done a really good job of making it so Jared Goff just has to stay within the scheme and within the system. And I think Tanner, from what I hear, he's in that same breath. You know, he's someone who's really just been at Ben Johnson's hip the last couple of years learning from him, and that's one of the more innovative play callers in the NFL. And, you know, I've heard nothing but positive reviews from Tanner. And I think for a first time OC, I don't know that it's particularly appealing having someone like Aaron Rodgers who likes to dictate everything he's doing at the line of scrimmage, and he likes to run things his way. And ultimately, that's just not what it's going to be with this new regime. And I think a different quarterback will allow someone like Tanner Engstrom to be more creative depending on who the quarterback is and if they can handle that sort of thing. And I think they're going to seek to find somebody who can do that, whether it's Tyrod Taylor, if they believe he can, or if they go out and get somebody else out there that's a veteran or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, Tyrod obviously being on you know, under contract and already there makes sense. I've been telling people, you know, don't float Jordan Travis to me yet. Like, we can have that conversation in camp. It's just not a realistic thing. But now people are throwing out the Justin Fields of the world. I also don't think Sam Darnold has any legs to come back. I definitely don't want to hear any Zach Wilson. But I am slightly interested in Kirk Cousins, only because Kirk Cousins, you know, he'll be another year removed from the Achilles injury. Kirk Cousins down there with the Falcons running out of the shotgun versus running play action, he may be more inclined to be in an offense where they're going to lean on Breece Hall, Braylon Allen, Isaiah Davis, you know, the running game and try and set up play action. I think he'll be more inclined to potentially work with the Jets that way. What do you think about these guys and the names that are floating out there outside of Tyrod, but these potential free agent quarterbacks that the Jets could go after?
Yeah, you know, I think that Kirk is one that I think will be on the list of consideration. I think he'll get interest elsewhere, too. Derek Carr's name I would have my eye on if he doesn't stick around in New Orleans. Justin Fields, ultimately, it's not like the most appealing class of quarterbacks unless somebody, you know, both breaks free and would be under consideration, like would want to play for the Jets. You know, someone like Matthew Stafford, depending on that situation goes, he'd be appealing because I think he's one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL still. Kyler Murray, somebody I'd be interested in if the Cardinals were willing to move him for the right price. He's still young. I don't know that those guys are actually available, though. So it's going to be, you're more likely going to be wading in the waters of a Kirk Cousins, of a Derek Carr, of a you know, a Justin Fields. Somebody, they have flaws. They're not perfect, but, you know, you can maybe win with them if you build the right offense around them.
We're on the phone right now with Zach Rosenblatt, who covers the Jets for The Athletic. I am completely against them using that 7 overall pick on a quarterback. You know, even if Shedeur Sanders falls, I just think there's so much talent at multiple positions, whether they want to go corner, whether they want to go O-line, D-line, or even tight end. What are your thoughts, and where do you think this new regime is leaning with that 7 overall pick if it's not a quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, with the quarterback, I mean, it depends on if they value, whether it's Cam Ward or Shedeur Sanders, if they view them as a franchise quarterback, then if you feel that way, you absolutely go and get them. But if not, you know, it's the cliche of best player available, but I think they have the ability to do that. They do have a lot of talent on this team still, I believe, but on almost every spot that has like the top 10 talent in this draft, you could argue they could use a player like that, whether it's, you know, an offensive tackle, they could use a right tackle right now, whether it's a corner, DJ Reed's probably leaving, defensive line, you can never have enough defensive linemen. They could use a defensive tackle next to Quinnen, or, you know, get an edge rusher, and you really have a rotation with Jermaine and Will McDonald, and so a wide receiver even, like, you know, Devontae is probably not coming back, and so the cupboard is a little bare once you go outside of Garrett Wilson. So I think they can pretty much go in any of these directions, and it's a good draft class for those positions because I think they'll get somebody at one of those spots at number 7 who can contribute right away.
Yeah, my next question for you is about some of the guys that are here. You mentioned Quinnen Williams, and he hit Twitter and kind of expressed his displeasure. It's not great. That's more same old Jets. If anything, we've seen that type of stuff before, and I would expect they've probably already been in touch with him about that. There's some rumors that Garrett Wilson will want out, you know, not to start over with a new offensive coordinator, new quarterback. He'll want to seek a trade. I think Sauce Gardner has expressed that he's excited. What else do you know about any of the players' reactions to this new regime and this news that Aaron Rodgers will not be the quarterback?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think when Aaron Glenn was hired, they were all pretty excited about it, especially defensive guys. I don't know what Garrett Wilson feels. I think he's kind of laid pretty low. To his credit, he hasn't really reacted emotionally, which I think Quinnen Williams did. The Aaron Rodgers thing, it seems like some of these guys were surprised by it. I don't really know why you'd be surprised by it, just based on all the context and everything that's transpired. He clearly was popular in that locker room, at least amongst certain guys. And, you know, I would say to the Quinnen thing, like, I hope one of Aaron Glenn's initiatives is to get these guys to stop tweeting because it does nothing for this team and but provide a distraction. I think a lot of guys have had some issues with that. So if you can get them to stop tweeting, I think he'd be in good shape. But yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see as this offseason plays out how these guys feel, what the Jets do, how that impacts everything. I mean, a lot of these guys are looking at a coaching staff that's relatively inexperienced outside of like a Steve Wilkes. And so, you know, how excited are they about that? But there are a lot of former players on the staff too. So it's going to be interesting to see how these guys react to the new regime, to the new culture and the things that Aaron Glenn is trying to establish.
Last one for you. I've never been to New Orleans, never been to the Superdome. You were just down there for the Super Bowl. Can you share with us one thing that you learned or something, maybe some food you tried or something you learned about the city, something that you experienced being down there for the Super Bowl that you weren't aware of before?
I mean, I've been to New Orleans many times, so I wouldn't say I learned anything necessarily new, but I would just say in terms of, I mean, number one, it's the best food city in the NFL, in my opinion, and probably one of the best in America. The food down there is just absolutely phenomenal. The Cajun food can get pretty exotic. I love a good like gator sausage. I love a little crawfish. You can get turtle soup if you go to the right place. Got some fun stuff. But I just think it's the best host city possible, frankly, in terms of the location of it. Yeah, everything's walkable. There's not a bad restaurant in the town. And, you know, I mean, like the airport setup's not like the most ideal, but you deal with that when you leave kind of thing. And it's just set up in a way that everything is pretty centrally located. It's not a huge city, but they have a lot of hotels. And I just think the culture there is so cool. And I hope they host it there again pretty frequently or at least sooner than later.
Yeah, I think I heard some complaints, just people comparing Vegas, who had their first one, to this year in New Orleans. I think they're obviously a huge contrast and difference, and you can't really expect, you know, Vegas and New Orleans to be the same. But did you make it to Radio Row at all? Did you see the setup around Radio Row? From what I read an article in Barrett Media and just things that I saw, Radio Row now has become like mini television sets, and everything now is video and streaming dynamic, and everyone's kind of sitting in, you know, chairs and couches and on microphones. It's not like it used to be with just terrestrial radio and, you know, different cities popping in and no video component and just kind of like, you know, streaming back home.
Yeah, I'd say it definitely is more dominated by like those large extravagant sets. Like Pat McAfee basically brought his whole set there, and Kay Adams had this huge thing, and Yahoo Sports had like a big Toyota truck there, and even The Athletic had one for their podcast. That part of it was definitely cool. But yeah, it definitely has. I mean, there definitely still was like local radio shows. I went on a couple of them that are still like scattered throughout, but it seems like it's gotten more and more big in terms of, you know, these companies spending a lot of money to have really, really cool sets to bring these professional athletes and actors and celebrities on.
Zach, you're the man. Keep doing your thing. You've come on my show a bunch of times. I appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Yeah, you too, man. Always great talking with you, Keith.
888-808-1019 in here watching the Knicks game. It's 56-50 Knicks over the Pacers. We still have Giants fans that want to talk Eli Manning and the Giants, so we can get back to that. But it's also now open for reaction to any of the Jets conversation around Aaron Rodgers that I just had with Zach Rosenblatt. I'll also sprinkle in a couple more things as Aaron Glenn's coaching staff is set, and I'm very interested to see how they approach the draft and the offseason and some moves and stuff that they'll be making to try and improve this team. And again, you know, change the people on the team so that they can really create their own vibe and culture and move forward the next, you know, few years of Aaron Glenn being the head coach of the Jets.
Your official home to talk New York sports is WFAN. Call us anytime at 888-808-1019. The Fan, 1019 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
And just like that, we're back. Thanks for holding. Thanks for listening. Dial 888-808-1019 if you'd like to join the show. You can reach me online at Keith_McPherson. I've got Dan Duggan coming up at 9:15, who covers the Giants for The Athletic. Shout out to Zach Rosenblatt for joining me for the 10th time, who covers the Jets for The Athletic. And I'll be going live on YouTube probably around 10 o'clock once we get through the interviews. Got eyes on this Knicks game. About a minute left until half. 63-55 Knicks over Pacers. And if you're just tuning in, I opened up the show talking a little bit about the Super Bowl, but obviously now it's Tuesday. We're moving away from some of that. But that led us into football here in New York, which has been extremely depressing and underwhelming and sad. We'll get into the baseball to pick us up a little bit later, but the two conversations around the Jets and the Giants involve quarterbacks, two Hall of Fame quarterbacks, and who's the next quarterback? We're talking about Eli Manning not being a first ballot Hall of Famer, and Aaron Rodgers officially being done and out. He'll be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And then, obviously, where do we go next? Tyrod Taylor and Jordan Travis exist in the Jets franchise. I don't think anybody is too pumped up about the prospect of either one of them getting multiple starts next year. And then for the Giants, they have nothing. Tommy DeVito, maybe, but like, just no. They need to draft a quarterback and they need to sign a veteran. So taking calls on all of that, but I do want to go to Hudson in Jersey before we get back to those calls. What's up, man?
Hello?
What's up, Hudson?
Hi, I'm here to talk about the Mets. I want to give like an off-season grade and talk about projections for the regular season.
The Brooklyn Nets? How are we going to talk about the off-season?
No, the Mets. The Mets.
The Brooklyn Nets?
M-E-T-S. Mets.
Oh, okay. Your topic says Brooklyn Nets. That's on Alex. You want to talk about the make-it-happen Mets. Go for it.
So I think they missed out on pitching this off-season, and I think that might be a problem during the regular season. But I'm really happy with Soto and bringing back Alonso. I don't know how you feel about that.
When you say they missed out on pitching, what pitching free agents were you looking to sign? They brought in Clay Holmes. They brought in Frankie Montas, Griffin Canning. They also brought back Sean Manaea.
Maybe Seve or Corbin Burns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Corbin Burns.
I feel like one more pitcher would have helped, like an ace.
Yeah, but they added to the bullpen. The Mets bullpen is much better than it was at this time last year.
I like AJ Minter.
Yeah, he's going to be good. They brought back Ryan Stanek. And, I mean, if Clay Holmes doesn't work out as a starter, you can kick him to the bullpen. Dednil Nunez showed us some stuff last year. Jose Buto. Obviously, Edwin Diaz. Reed Garrett. I'm sure I'm forgetting some guys, but I think if the bullpen is strong in modern day pitching, these pitchers go 4 or 5 innings. You got to have a strong bullpen. And if the Mets are able to get, you know, David Peterson and Sean Manaea to be what they were last year, get, you know, 30 starts out of Kodai Senga, which I think is far fetched, I think they'll be all right because they're going to hit. You know, the conversation around the Mets is that they have the best lineup in the league on paper.
I 100% agree. The lineup is really deep. It's like it's just one after another good hitters, and I like that. I like how they have that.
Yeah, no matter how you line it up, you know, I think the top three should be Lindor, Soto, Alonso. But, you know, Mark Vientos in Act 2, hoping that he can be a guy that hits 30, 35 homers, having a full season. Bringing back Jesse Winker, him and Marte, DH, and Brandon Nimmo, who played like an all-star for the first half of last year. Even when you get lower in the lineup, guys like Jeff McNeil, Francisco Alvarez, if they can be consistent, you know, the Mets do have a real opportunity here to have one of the better lineups in the National League.
Yeah, I agree. How do you feel about the prospect Acuna, Luis Angel?
I thought he belonged. I thought the little bit that we saw of him last year, he was a slow heartbeat guy. We obviously know, you know, his family ties to Ronnie, MVP. I think, you know, if you want to evaluate your young talent and start to look to the future, you got to get that guy in the mix somewhere.
I agree. He's been performing super well in the Venezuelan League. He looks really good.
Yeah, I think he's a star in the making, and I think he's going to have a little bit more potential than, let's say, a Brett Beatty. I don't know what we're going to see out of Ronnie Mauricio this year. And like I said with Vientos, I believe in him because he did it when the lights were brightest in the postseason, but he still got to follow up and do it again.
Yeah.
So what was your offseason grade for the Mets?
I would say probably the B+. because just like the pitching, but the Soto signing's huge. Bringing back Winker's a good like move to make the lineup deeper. But just in general, it was a really, really good offseason, top three.
Jose Siri is in the mix there. We haven't mentioned him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
I'll give him a B-.
B-? Yeah, I agree. Sure.
Thanks for the call, Hudson. 888-808-1019. I guess we're talking Mets now. But back to the conversation around the Jets, the Giants, the quarterbacks of old, and the quarterbacks of the future. Mike is in Westchester. You got it, Mike. Go for it.
Keith.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Keith. I'm happy Aaron Rodgers is gone. I mean, anybody who's not happy about it, they really didn't pay attention to last year. He can't run. I mean, he looked okay, but nowadays, just look at the Jalen yesterday in the Super Bowl. I mean, you need a quarterback that can escape, run for 20, 30 yards. Nowadays, you need that kind of a quarterback. And Aaron ain't going to do it for us. So I'm pretty happy that he's gone. And I tell you, the one quarterback that is on my radar is Justin Fields. I think he would fit in perfect for the Jets. He has that escapability. He has the arm. He has some experience in the NFL. And I think he would work good, you know, with the new offensive coordinator coming from the NFC. I think that's a great fit. I think we should go after him.
I think so, too. Thanks for the call, Mike. I'm trying to see what, you know, I know that they both went to Ohio State. Talking about Garrett Wilson and Justin Fields now. Did they have a year together? I want to say Justin Fields was out of there before. Justin Fields was drafted in 2021. And I think Garrett Wilson was drafted 2022. Either way, I'm sure they know each other. I'm sure they have some type of rapport. Maybe you try to connect those two guys. And, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, I just was thinking about that quote that Leonard Williams had about him, where he said, you know, I think he's an older guy, doesn't want to take big hits like that anymore. So sometimes if you feel a guy coming full speed at him, you know, he's going to chuck it and duck. That's Leonard Williams, former Jet, former Giant, telling you, like, Aaron Rodgers don't have it anymore. He doesn't win games. He's trying to protect himself. And if the rush is coming, he's just going to chuck and duck. That is why I go back to what I was saying. The biggest thing, not Pat McAfee, not going to Egypt and skipping mandatory mini camp, not even just his influence and his power, you know, his voice being louder than the head coach or the dead cap. They watched the film. They watched the film. And I also leaned into Aaron Glenn being a former player. And, you know, I think he had a 14-year career. And the NFL is a brotherhood. Those guys have a ton of respect for guys like Aaron Rodgers who have done it at a high level for that long. So I think the grace was applied. Like, okay, we watched the film and this guy was not as good as the numbers say. Men lie, women lie. Numbers don't lie, but stats do. He was able to stat pad at the end of the year. But I think the grace of, okay, let's have the conversation and let's see if Aaron Rodgers wants to buy in here for maybe, you know, a last dance, one more go at this thing. He didn't want to. So bye. If you don't want to fall in line, if you don't want to give up your ESPN appearance on Pat McAfee, which is a huge distraction because every week you're going to go tell them the inner workings of what I'm doing and the decision making and have a mouthpiece. Like, no, no, it's not worth it. You don't want to be at every mandatory minicamp. Like, we don't care if you have a trip booked to go to South America, Egypt, Japan. It's about football. It's about being 1 of 53. So, okay, Aaron, if that does not appeal to you, then that doesn't appeal to us. Good luck elsewhere. They're turning the page. Chris is in Hicksville on the Fan. What's up, Chris?
Hey, what's up, my man? Well, listen, you had a caller. I don't know where he's from, Denver. And he talked about this New York hype. If anything, there's an anti-New York bias out there. That's why Guidry got screwed out of the MVP in 78. That's why Jeter got screwed out of the MVP when Joe Mauer got it. That's why Seva only has 3 Cy Young Awards. There's such an anti-New York bias out there. that is so prevalent, and people who don't live here don't see it. I mean, Strawberry got screwed out of the MVP that one year. I mean, it's
always
so prevalent.
With the voting. Always with the voting. Rookie of the year,
yeah.
Gary Sanchez, Miguel Andujar, even yeah, further back, Matsui
got screwed. Exactly. It's unbelievable. And the other thing about Eli, like, I love Eli. He's a Hall of Famer. But and everybody talks about his interceptions, his one loss record. Dan Fouts' one loss record. Look at the interceptions he's thrown. Look at his playoff record. Look at Warren Moon's playoff record. And the great Bill Parcells had the greatest quote. He should tell all his quarterbacks, if you guys aren't throwing one or two interceptions a game, then you're not taking enough chances.
Yeah, you got to risk it.
You're not having
no
enough.
No risk it, no biscuit. You got to try
exactly.
And make it happen. How did he make the Mario Manningham pass, the David Tyree pass?
Exactly, man. You got to have the stones to do it. And, you know, like I said, Eli's not an all-time great. He's not Brady. He's not his brother. But, boy, that guy's a Hall of Famer, man. It's just astronaut.
It's just a matter of time. He's going to get in. Great call, Chris. At the same time, there is New York hate, right? Obviously, I said we're in an echo chamber. It is so loud on WFAN. It is so loud on social media. When you live around here and you hear people around here, I was almost convinced that Eli was a lock to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. And then when I saw the reaction and everything written and said, even leading up to it, I forget who it was that went on with Mad Dog Russo that was basically like, he's not getting in. And then Sal Palantonio was talking about it. Bob Papa, I got to reach out to Bob to call in. Shout out to Bob. Text Bob. Probably not tonight, but like, maybe I'll set that up for Thursday. I'll put a note to text Bob. Man, I want to know more about the process of that, like, presentation to present Eli and what that room was like, you know? I just feel like there's a lot of haters on New York, and I get it. Greatest city in the world, ton of people here. If I can make it there, like, I get it. I've been in media long enough. I used the example when I was on MLB Network a couple seasons ago. I would always see in the comments, oh, the East Coast bias, East Coast bias. And then even in production meetings, it was talked about, hey, we got to talk about, you know, the San Diego Padres or the Arizona Diamondbacks. We got to talk about the Cardinals. It can't just be Yankees and Mets, even though we're right here in Secaucus, New Jersey, where, you know, shout out to everybody over there at 40 Hearts Way. Most of the people working at MLB Network are Yankees or Mets fans. And, like, you know, the 2022 season, you had two top teams. So it wasn't that we're just, you know, forcing it. The Mets had a great story in 2022, and so did the Yankees. But, you know, people in other parts of the country, they don't want to hear it, man. They feel like we think we're better than everybody else. And because of the population and because of the media market, we're able to kind of force our hand. And I think it works both ways, especially with the voting. With the voting, they don't want to give the Yankees another trophy. Throw Aaron Boone in the mix. He should have been manager of the year. I think, was it 2019 when Rocco Baldelli won it? You know, there's always some type of fix in there from my experience looking at these votes, specifically with the Hall of Fame, even with, you know, these awards at the end of the year. It's like, come on, yo. That we don't get any credit for, like, it being harder here. I guess because we make it harder on ourselves, right? Like, somewhere in Kansas, they're like, we're not giving you credit for it being harder to play in New York because your fans heckle their own team and boo their own players. Ed is in Mohegan. What's up, Ed? You're on the Fan.
What do you say, Keith? You know, I turned on the radio tonight, and right away, I'm at the point now where I just know it's your voice. You're at that point. I love it. You're doing such a great job. Not a lot of guys. I got to listen for a while to hear who's on the radio right away.
Appreciate
you got
it.
Such a recognizable voice, man. I'm really happy that you're doing well.
It takes time. I have learned, and one of the craziest things in life is being recognized by my voice now. People hearing the voice in there being like, oh, you sound just like you sound on the radio. And I'm like, nice to meet you. I'm Keith. I know who you are. I'm like, it's an interesting dynamic to let your voice introduce you before you could shake someone's hand.
That's really interesting you say that, because I don't know if you listened to Howard Stern when he first came on the air. He's sort of like, use this high-pitched voice, and then he started using his own voice. And it's still a radio voice, but but like a lot of guys have a radio voice and then they have their own voice.
Uh-huh.
That's kind of cool that you have that. That's interesting that you say that.
I don't have a different voice. This is how I talk all the time.
No, that's cool. I may have some different
lingo or slang, or like I might not talk to my mom or my wife like this, or my baby like this, but for the most part in, you know, fan conversations at an event or at a stadium or where you might see me in a bar or something like that, this is how I sound.
Let me ask you a quick question. I want to talk about Eli, but let me ask you a quick question, just something about you. When you do have, like, when you're at an event, not so much an event, but, like, let's say a family dinner, like, let's say Thanksgiving, do people talk to you about sports, or is that, like,
taboo? Yeah, and not for nothing.
You know what I mean?
I'm like, I don't want to talk about Juan Soto at Thanksgiving.
You don't. Like, you want to just get away from it.
Like, shout out to my father-in-law. He may be listening. But he literally said something to me the last time I saw him, like, oh, I'm not excited about the Super Bowl. And in my head, I'm like, then let's not talk about it. You don't have to.
Well, you hear that a lot.
Yeah,
people
if you're
up
not
and
excited about the Super
then,
Bowl,
yeah.
Neither am I. There's nothing to talk about. Conversation over on to the next.
No, it's funny. I cut Roy White's hair once years ago.
He's the best.
And he was awesome. And, like, it was in the mall years ago when he had hair, as long ago it was. And because
he still got a little, just keep it on the sides. Shout out to Roy. He's got a little bit of hair.
No, he had like a little Jerry curl thing going on back then. But I went to meet him and I said, hey, why don't you come in for a haircut? And he shows up. And I think, okay, well, I'm not going to talk sports with him. And that's all he did. He was into it. Like, he was talking. As a matter of fact,
he's
it was
incredible.
Around the Ruben.
I had
it was Ruben Rivera he was touting at the time. Remember that guy?
Yeah, I had him on here, and he was talking about, you know, working out with Joe DiMaggio. My producer's giving me the timeout. I know you had a take about Eli before we go to break. Go for it.
All right, real quick. I mean, I believe he's a Hall of Famer, and I'll tell you why. And to me, the Hall of Fame is not just about the stats. I mean, all right, three things. A, he's a great guy. B, he played every game. The guy was durable. And C, how many Hall of Famers did Eli play with? Like, even when he beat Tom Brady, he had Randy Moss. A lot of guys had, like, the best player he ever played with was Tiki Barber, and then even win a Super Bowl with him. So, like, and look, Brandon Jacobs, great player, Plaxico, great player, but never had that great player. And a lot of those interceptions people talk about, those are tip balls. And that should be a new stat.
It should
like,
be
how many deflection interceptions did he have?
Assisted interception. Thanks for the call, Ed.